Welcome to a journey inside the soul of one of sports media's brightest minds. A profoundly nuanced odyssey called Stupodity. Hosted by the incomparable Stu Gotts, a man I consider a personal hero and icon of the industry. I want to make no bones about it. There is no Mike Greenberg today without the sensational Stu Gotts providing me the inspiration to chase my dream and challenge myself to be just half as brilliant as he is. Allow me, Mike Greenberg, a man who would probably today be doing traffic in Sioux Falls without Stu Gotts' influence, to welcome you to a truly transcendent sonic experience. This is Stupodity.
Welcome into another episode of Stupodity, the biggest podcast in the world, thanks to you. Bigger than Missing in Alaska. I mean, how about that, Stanzik? We're bigger than them. Whatever that is, whatever's going on there, and whoever's missing in Alaska, get them on the pod, Stanzik. Okay? I mean, they might not be able to find them, but when they do, get them on the podcast, all right?
In all fairness, I don't know what that podcast is about. I know it's very high in the charts. Right. We did not look into it. Missing in Alaska sounds like a true crime podcast. I hope we're not saying anything offensive, but we're bigger than them.
Well, we'll get those people on. Whoever's hosting it, whoever's missing, when they find them, I want to, because, I mean, Missing in Alaska sounds terrible. I mean, there's got to be a good story behind it, no?
Hopefully someone gets found. Hopefully they're alive. We're saying all the right things.
All right. Well, listen, Bill Belichick found Cam Newton this week. How about that?
Sure did.
He was missing in Alaska, Cameron. I mean, all of a sudden he's an MVP, one of the great quarterbacks in the NFL, and then he just disappears after going 0-8 over his last 8 starts. Just a little piece of the story that people seem to be leaving out as they praise the Patriots. That was pretty big news, right? It is amazing to me, Stanzik. This is why I hate the Jets. While everyone else is trying to make moves here, there, everywhere, Belichick is jumping into a lake shirtless first week of free agency, and Cameron Newton, a former MVP, just falls in his lap. And once again, the Patriots have the, by doing nothing, by simply existing, the Patriots have the best quarterback for the 21st consecutive year in the AFC East. It's unbelievable. It really is.
Why'd you call him Cameron?
I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. By the way, you know who had that first, right?
It was you, apparently.
Well, yes. This is me back in November on the Levitard show, November of 19. For those of you out there trying to claim that you called this thing, okay? Mina said it during quarantine. I think Dominique said it at some point. Enough. I said it last November while last season was going on. While Dan was on his 6-month hiatus, I didn't ask for any of this.
Bill, I'll get you out of here in a second. I have a theory. I want to be the first one to say it, okay? Cam Newton to the Patriots next year. How about that?
What's wrong
what are you
with
talking him? About?
Listen, I'm telling you, Brady leaves and Belichick makes a trade for Cam Newton and the Patriots have another 10-year run. How about
first.
That? I said it first, Bill.
I love that you monitor Tom Brady's real estate and then decide that that means he's not going to be with the team next year. Just because he moved. Just because he's moving.
That's all Stu needs. He just needs a change of location.
Yes.
Him and Giselle looking at a different house, and he immediately thinks, you know, he's going to be playing for the Chargers.
And by the way, if Brady stays, they still get Cam Newton and make him a tight end.
I did Stu Gotts' podcast like a week and a half ago, and he said with a straight face, could you see Brady in Tennessee next year? I'm like, no, I actually don't. I don't see him playing 20 years for the Patriots right. And then wrapping it up on the Tennessee Titans. I'm going to say that's not happening.
You did perk up when I said Tom Brady, next head coach at the University of Michigan.
That was good. Yeah. See, that one I think you have to craft a little bit. Yeah. I like that one. The timing's right. That's a good one.
Stanzik, here's the key to my takes, okay? And this is like, it's the last lesson for Mina, and we'll get to Mina in a second, because she sent me something. I mean, a little embarrassing for you. I think COVID's getting to you. Not that you have it or anything, just the whole idea. It's either that or marriage. Because you are a cranky motherfucker lately, man.
It's probably because they talk to you so much.
Yeah, probably. It's either that or marriage.
The only two suspects, you and my wife.
Listen to me. 3 years from now, you will be yearning to speak to me on a regular basis, like all day, every day. Okay, and it might be sooner than that, the way it's going early on for you. All right, but here's the key to the hot take, and Mina has not realized this. Within the main take of Brady leaving and Cam Newton going to the Patriots, I covered all my bases. If Brady stays, Cam Newton's tight end. Now, if Cam Newton plays one down of tight end this year as the Patriots, I've nailed that just one down. I have nailed that prediction, right? I mean, they go with Jared Stidham, and maybe they do play Cam at tight end. In the event that they do, I've got it covered, okay? Right. I covered my bases with Cam to the Patriots. I covered my bases with Brady leaving, Cam taking over as quarterback. So I'm right on all of that. This is where it gets next level, and Mina needs to learn this. I've covered Brady's next move as well. And I did it in November of 19. So, Stanzik, if you listen to that soundbite we just played with Simmons on the line, it's the take that Simmons actually liked, is once Brady retires, I have him as the next head coach at the University of Michigan.
Basically, what you did is you diversified your take.
I did.
You didn't just have one take, Cam Newton to the Patriots. You had like six takes wrapped up in it. And what I found so funny in that clip was how laughable everybody thought Tom Brady to Tennessee was.
Yes.
And from what we know now, Tennessee was one of the main suitors.
Correct. Tennessee was one of the main suitors for Tom Brady. It got down to, I think, Tennessee, San Francisco, and Tampa Bay. And he ended up obviously going to Tampa Bay, but that's next level stuff there. I got all the takes in. Plus, I have the next. There is no next take on Brady. It's a couple of years with the Buccaneers, right? And then whatever he does from there, I've already called it because I have him as the next head coach at Michigan. Listen, there's a possibility Harbaugh's not doing very well there. And 2 years from now, if Harbaugh's still not doing well, he gets fired. Brady replaces him as the head coach. I would again. I mean, it's all about me winning. That's it. All right, let's get to Mina here because you are unraveling. I mean, it is 4th of July week, which is mail-in week, and you want to get the hell out of here. And listen, I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask for any of this. Mina told me to bring this up, okay?
Okay.
A text exchange, okay? Are you familiar with what I'm about to bring up? Do you know already what I'm about to bring up?
Yeah, it was email.
All right. I mean, you're going to blame this on me? You're going to blame it on marriage? I mean, what are you
gonna probably do? You.
Or
probably
COVID.
You.
Go on me, right?
Listen, yeah, it's bad.
The secret is between us, all right? When Stanzik blames stuff on me, he's really lashing out at his wife, okay? So audience, just so you guys know, okay?
Not true.
No, audience, I'm telling you, that's what's happening. Listen, we are bigger than missing in Alaska. This is why. Because I really peel back the curtain on this thing in a way that pisses everyone off. Here's the exchange. Hey, Mina, here's the open for tomorrow. We have this too. Woo! Field wants to do 2:30/5:30 AFC South. Now, I will tell you before I get to the end here, you're doing a podcast on the AFC South. I am there. So I will be tuning in. All right?
I mean, tighten up.
Yeah, that's all I want to do is the AFC South. Is that the Titans division?
Yeah, that's why I said tighten up. Let me double check. I hope so. The week I'm having, I better double check my.
I'm checking too.
Oh, yeah, no, it certainly is.
The AFC South, yes.
Yeah.
Tighten up. And so she writes back to you.
You're doing a terrible job explaining the story, like a terrible job.
Let me start over. So Stanzik is trying
I'm
to.
I'm keeping that in now.
Keep it on, okay. And get Mina on.
Okay.
So Stanzik is trying to set up a time. They're trying to set up what they're going to do this week on Mina's podcast. Okay,
football podcast.
On her football podcast. So Stanzik says to Mina, "Here's the open for tomorrow." Stanzik then follows it up by, "We have this too, something about a Coors Light summer something."
I forgot to send her the live read, so I'm 0 for 1. Let me tell the story, because you're doing a terrible job.
All right, go ahead.
Again, you're 0 for 2. Okay. I sent Mina an email.
You're 0 for 2. But
that's true. Yeah, well, we'll get to my big miss here. Okay. I sent Mina an email, said, hey, here's what we have to read for this week. What time are we having Field Yates on? Because I know we're taping with Field Yates. He's the guest this week. And what are we talking about? Like, which division are you and Field going to preview? So she sends back. And then I forgot to send her the live read. So I follow up to my original email, send her the email with the live reading. By the way, we have this too. She says woo, which was weird. Field wants to do 230/530. We're doing the AFC South.
Right.
My response to Mina is then, cool, thanks. Is that 230 Eastern slash 530 Pacific or the reverse? Mina's reply.
What's wrong with that?
Mina's reply was, Dan, how would that be possible? As soon as I saw her email, I replied and said, yep, it's a great point. I'll see myself out.
I'm still confused as to what you did wrong.
Yeah, so 2:30 Eastern, 5:30 yeah. Pacific is not possible.
What?
2:30 Eastern, it'd be 11:30 Pacific.
Yes. Okay, yes. Glad you explained it, because I was trying to figure out what was wrong with the actual thing. And by the way, just so you, because you don't speak fluent Mina yet, that woo was because Field is coming on and she gets to talk AFC South.
Got it.
That's okay. What the woo was. So you thought, so it would be 2:30, according to what you're saying here, 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific is the way it would normally, like, that's where you botched it, right?
Yeah, I guess I was confused why she put the 2:30 first, because when she put 2:30 first, I thought she was telling me, I'm on the East Coast, I thought she was telling me, hey, we'll do it at 2:30,
right,
and then put the other time for her, because that's what I would normally do for a guest. I would put their time first.
Okay.
But Mina did the reverse. She put her own time first, my time second.
Okay. So, all right, you made a mistake. Not your first and certainly won't be your last, and you blame it all on me. Okay,
yeah,
that's fine.
That's
and
it.
By me, it's your wife and marriage. So anyway, we have Tim Kiley coming on. He's the executive vice president, the EVP. I don't know what else that would stand for, the EVP of the pregame show on TNT, the NBA pregame show that we love on TNT. And we just recently had Ernie Johnson. Ernie Johnson told us, if you want the stories, if you want how this show came to fruition, if you want all the inside stuff on Shaq, Kenny, and Charles, if you want the inside stuff on Ernie and all the entire show, to talk to Tim Kiley. So Stan did a great job, reached out to Tim Kiley, got him on, and we are going to talk to the creator of the best pregame show in the history of pregame shows and post shows, by the way. I put it, it's that and College Game Day. That's the standard right there in terms of pregame shows. I'm excited to speak to Kiley. Are you excited to speak to Kiley, Stan?
Of course, yeah. It's one of the best shows on TV, Inside the NBA.
I am going to tell the audience that we taped this last week. And I am also going to tell them, all right? But listen, I take him inside because I have to, and that's why we're bigger than Missing in Alaska, all right? I always say that to set this up. What you're going to hear, how long is it, Stanzik?
50-something minutes, 55, 58 minutes. It's really good.
It's
one of our better interviews.
It's the equivalent of a South Beach session for us, but there's nothing serious. Not a single serious thing, I don't think, in the entire interview, right?
I don't think so, but you're also the same guy that broke news last week and didn't realize he was breaking news. I don't think there's anything serious either.
Yeah, but listen, we are on a hot streak, so we're bigger than Missing in Alaska. We have the Brady news that we broke. We had the Andre Drummond news that we broke. I predicted Cam Newton to the Patriots in 2019, and I had Brady going to Michigan, and I'm telling you, that's going to happen. And so this podcast has become something you and I never imagined it to be. News breaking. But I don't think we break any news here.
No.
We just have a fun conversation with Tim Kiley. Now, because Stanzik is excellent at his job, what you are going to hear is 50-some-odd minutes of clean, fun interview. That's what you're going to hear. A clean, fun conversation between myself, Stanzik, and Tim Kiley, and it is great. And I am not underselling it by telling you that it is great. Not good. It is great. Kiley is a genius. He steals things from us. I steal things from him. We reveal it to each other. It is fantastic. We just put it out there in the open. What you're not going to hear is an unraveling Dan Stanzik. You can blame it on me. You can blame it on marriage. You can blame it on Mina. You can blame it on mail-in week. Or you can just simply say the dude has been locked inside his house for 5 months because of COVID-19 and he's starting to crack in the seams. But what you're going to hear after the interview, and what you don't hear during the interview, is this 50-some-odd minute interview took 3 hours. And I have never heard Dan Stanzik, who is normally calm, cool, and collected. He's A, never gotten this angry with me, this upset. I'm not even certain I did anything, but I have never heard you this frustrated in my life. You will not hear it during the interview, but we will break it down via montage after the interview so you can hear the levels of annoyance Stanzik has with not Kylie, but me for some reason, who didn't do anything. So let's get to the fun parts, the 50-some-odd minutes we have with Tim Kylie, and then we will get to Stanzik's mind exploding afterwards. So it's worth staying tuned for the aftermath of the Tim Kylie interview. Kylie is worth it on its own. Stanzik exploding and yelling at me is certainly worth sticking around afterwards. Here's Tim Kylie, creator of the best pregame show in the history of pregame shows. All right, let's bring on Tim Kylie, the executive vice president, EVP of the best pregame show studio show in America, the NBA on TNT. Timmy, thanks so much for doing this.
Since we're on, I want to tell you, I got to hyperventilate here for a minute because this is the honor of my life to be on Stupidity, which I think should be changed to Stupendity because of your role on the show and Dan's role. I just want to know how your back's doing carrying Levitard around because
it's for 17 years and he's heavy. And it hurts like a lot, especially the lower lumbar section of it. It's
no question. When you take that club head back, it's you hear Levitard's voice barking at you. So
I always hear Levitard's voice barking at me. I mean, that's what I signed up for. This is very exciting. I got to tell you, I'm happy that you're excited to be on Stupidity, a career high for you. This is a news-breaking podcast the last couple of weeks for Tom Brady and Andre Drummond. We did not set out to break any news. In fact, Stanzik, you will attest to this. I don't remember breaking news with Andre Drummond.
Well,
that's in the episode that we recorded here.
Here's the thing. This comes as no surprise to me. We tape with Andre Drummond, and I'm going through it, and I'm getting ready to post it, and I'm like, Andre Drummond has this $28.75 million opt-in. Everyone knows he's going to opt in. But in the podcast, Tim, Stu Gott says, I don't want to tell you your business, but you're picking up that $28 million, aren't you? And Drummond essentially says, yes, I'll be back in Cleveland next year 100%. So me as a former morning show producer, I'm like, oh, that's actually news, even though no one's going to be surprised. So I send it to our news desk. Our news desk is like, oh, funny, whatever. They send it out. Our news desk then emails Stu Goss, is like, hey, you broke news. He has no idea what the news is. We talked to Andre Drummond about the Beer Olympics.
That's tremendous. I could give you a zillion examples of Charles saying something like that, and then within the next 15 seconds, he contradicts himself and doesn't even remember what he said. So I like that move by Andre Drummond, and then blah, 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 blah. Ernie, I don't think Andre Drummond should sign with them. Blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, it's just, that's the same thing. I mean, you know, we're all clueless, and why not admit it, you know? So
I'll give you a great exchange I had with Chuck Solitore, okay? He emails me saying, hey, big day for you, Stu. You broke news. I love when I have to send breaking news to SportsCenter with the name Stupidity on it. And I responded to him, I totally forgot that I did this. And he wrote back, well, of course you did because you break so much news around here. It's the second time in my 8 years at ESPN I've broken news. And yeah. I didn't remember it, but that's
yeah, it's you and Woj. You guys are just throwing hand grenades left and right, so it's no problem.
We're excited here. We have Tim Kylie on. We talked about him with Ernie Johnson when he was on a few weeks ago. And I, of course, was a professor in the Ernie Johnson School of Broadcasting, which is laugh out loud funny. But Tim Kylie is the EVP of Inside the NBA on TNT. Executive, well, Tim, what is that? Is that executive vice president? What is that?
I think that's a typo by me, actually.
Yeah.
No, I actually am the executive vice president in charge of short errands. So I just, you know, it's picking up coffee and shit like that. So, you know, that's what I do. So
what is the title, Tim? It's like the VP of production for TNT or something?
I have no idea. It's like Stu says about breaking news. I just, they send me a check this week. That's good. Okay. Whatever you want to call me, call me. So I'm good.
Listen, I would run with executive vice president. Not only the pregame show, up to your team, okay?
I'll do that. I'll do that. And I'll start talking like Trump with little hands and doing this stuff. So I'm all good.
So, Tim Kiley, Ernie Johnson told us if you want the stories, if you want to know more about this pregame show and how it came to be the best pregame show, I think along with College Game Day in the history of pregame shows, that Tim Kiley was the guy to get on, the executive vice president. Now it's Turner Sports, okay?
Yes.
And so Ernie told us you were the guy to get on. And so we are excited to have you on. Thank you for doing this, man.
I told you, it's my absolute pleasure. I listen to you guys all the time because our schedules are similar, you know, in terms of going into work. And I literally sit, and I'm not sucking up to you, although I am, because you are stupendity. But I hear you guys do bits and go, God damn it, why didn't I think of that? So, you know, but yeah, it's very simple. I told Stans that I tunneled out of Espen in 95. I was like Steve McQueen in The Great Escape. So I tunneled out and ended up in Atlanta, which is not a bad place to live. And then just was really tired of, you know, just as you guys would be, you know, Dan, you spoke of being a news producer, you know, the formulaic 1-2-3 kick, 1-2-3 kick. And when you had analysts, like, you know, we would do Baseball Tonight and those guys would sit there at 4 p.m, which was a joke in itself because we weren't on until 10. Like, what are you doing for 6 hours? But, you know, they would say, well, I'll say this and you say that. And, you know, there is nothing more unnatural. You just said it, Stu. You just forgot you broke news. You know, 10 minutes after they get done figuring out what they're going to say to each other, they forget what the hell they were going to say to each other because they're working so hard on memorizing shit. And I'm sitting here saying, look, these guys played, you know, you got a Barkley, you got Kenny Smith, a Shaq, a Magic, a whoever. There's nothing they haven't seen. So I give you a good example was when Magic joined us for a short period of time, and I thought he did pretty good work for us, but he called me. We had not met, and, you know, he had been on NBC and had struggled because they were very scripted. And he said, what time is the production meeting? And I said, what production meeting? And he said, at NBC, we had a production meeting at 11, and then we had another one at 2 and all this other. I said, Magic, do you know what time the game's on tomorrow? He said, yeah, 8 o'clock. I said, be here at 7:55. Because, you know, what's the point? You know, it's like, you know, you and Dan have a relationship, Levitard, I mean, that, you know, you don't need to prep.
Tim, I am with you. I think the more, like, for people, for creatures like me, and I think the guys that you are dealing with, the more I prep and the more you allow me to sit around and think about it, stand up and test this, the worse I'm going to be. I mean, that's just,
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing I love about what you guys do, and we were doing it for a while, is we don't fear mistakes. In fact, we celebrate them, you know. And so I've heard you up readings and commercial reads and all that other stuff. And those guys, everybody has a party about it, you know, because it's better radio and TV when you look like a human being as opposed to, you know, I mean, the people at home can't see this, but how many times have you guys watched local TV and the prompter goes out and the anchor starts doing this? The murder occurred on this, you know. Mm-hmm. And I used to tell my anchors, look, hold up the script and say, folks, the prompter's out. I'm going to read the story off of here. And it does a couple things. Number one, it sort of opens the curtain to the people at home as to what actually goes on, mm-hmm. that there's a prompter and that they have a script that they're reading. And two, it makes them look like human beings. You know, if something's going wrong today. Well, the guy at home watching who was trying to do actuary tables all day might have screwed up a number. And he went, well, they're just like me. I screwed up. They screwed up. You know, so I think that was really the formula. I didn't want 1-2-3 kick, 1-2-3 kick, which, you know, I don't know if Ernie told you the story about the coffee mug and throwing the coffee mug and all that other stuff, but that was sort of the beginning of his transformation. And then Kenny came, and then obviously when Charles came, it went nuclear. And then when Shaq came, it went galactic nuclear. So, you know, I mean, it was crazy, but it would all started with, I was trying to get Ernie to get off prompter and get off, you know, scripts.
Sure. Yeah, tell that story, Tim. He didn't tell us that story. Even if he did, Stu Goss would have forgotten about it. So
no question. That's the beauty of it. Well, when I first met him, you know, you guys know Ernie a little bit, I'm sure. I mean, he's a real sharp-witted guy, you know, and very dry, funny wit. It reminded me a lot of Kilborn when I worked with Kilborn at Espen. But he would write everything.
Feel-good edition, Kylie. The feel-good edition.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's no question.
I've been telling Stephen forever. I've been telling him, Kilborn and Haber, the feel-good edition, is the greatest. It's the greatest sports center of all time. At 2 in the morning in college, I was hammered. The feel-good edition was amazing.
No question. And I'll give you a quick one. Haber was so desperate to try to outkick Kilborn. So he would try to come up with catchphrases every chance he got, and Kilborn would just slaughter him. So it, you know, there was a ball hit that was a baseball highlight, and there was a ball hit to the gap, and some guy made a great running catch, and Haber went, "Ooh, he shucks at the gap," right? And all Kilborn did to was go, "Oh, creativity!" and Haber was like this, and just his head down after that. So, but anyway, back to Ernie.
I cut you off. Sorry.
No. I hope these are fun for you. So I'm fighting with him for a while, and I'm like, look, Ernie, I'm not getting what you are really all about when you're on camera and you're reading scripts. I mean, I know you're a good writer. And he takes great pride in his writing, and he is a beautiful writer. But, you know, for these, just thrown to a basketball game, who gives a shit? I don't need a lead-in, you know. I mean, just here it is. Let's go. But he was, you know, we were all taught. This is, again, 1995, so we were all taught in local TV, script. You have this much time, blah, 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 all that crap. And I turned the prompter off without telling him because he wouldn't stop. And so finally one night 30 seconds before air, I said, turn the prompter off. Ernie, we're turning the prompter off. Just go, right? And as the night went on, he was throwing out one-liners because he had no place to go. But he was being quick, and he was funny, and he was doing stuff. But in the commercial breaks, Stu, he was boiling, right? Because this was an uncomfortable position for him. But as we all know, you guys do this, when you put yourself in an uncomfortable position, you often get better. So the show ends, and I know he wants to kill me. So I come downstairs, and I'm trying to talk him down off the cliff. And when Ernie does the slow boil, it's like the old cartoon with the steam coming out. And so he won't listen to me, and he just turns and he walks, and I follow him. Ernie, the show is actually good. You sounded great. You know, you were much quicker. And he just kept walking. Next thing you know, he hits the bathroom, and I'm like, well, should I go in there or you know what? He had a coffee cup, and he whipped it against the wall, and it busted into 1,000 pieces. And some guy was in, poor guy was in the bathroom taking a dump, came running out with his pants down. Jesus Christ, you know, whatever. So the next day I went to, because this was the days of going postal. Remember, that was the expression.
Of course.
I went to the mall, and I bought a coffee cup that said going postal, and I just put it on his desk. And he still has it today. And he said, that was the moment where he realized, hey, maybe this guy's got an idea, and I should roll with it.
That show doesn't work without Ernie.
No question.
You have to have the pillar in the middle of all the chaos, and that's what he is, and he handles all the chaos as well as anyone I've ever seen in my entire life. But was that the moment? Like, when do you feel like you arrived at you had Ernie's full trust?
That would be the moment for that. But I will tell you where the original idea came from. I was doing a sports center with good old Charlie Steiner and Jack Edwards, right? Oh, it was boy. A 7 o'clock sports center. We were leading into a basketball game.
I almost bought all sports center stories at this point. Anyway, go ahead.
No question.
I'll have to be on for part two, Kylie. I'm telling you right now.
No question. But you guys know the moment. It's when Charlie Steiner is trying to read a kicker on Carl Lewis up the Matt National Anthem, and he just starts laughing. And there's nobody better than him. He's snorting and boogers are coming out and he can't even compose himself. So I get on the blower and I say to the game producer, I need 15 seconds. I'm going to be 15 whole seconds late. And I was, and the game producer went batshit, you know, and I'm thinking, what did you have to cut? You know, like one little bumper. I mean, give me a break. I got called in by the bosses and I said, you say what you want to me. You yell and scream. But that Charlie Steiner moment is going to be on every ESPN blooper reel from now to the end of eternity. And, you know, every time you see him do a blooper reel, there's Charlie, can't compose himself, talking about Carl Lewis. So that kind of got me to a point where I was like, why can't we have that kind of stuff? And then when I got to Turner, there was no real middle or upper management to say, do it this way, do it that way. So it was just me and, you know, I just went, hey, Ernie, how about we try this, you know? And then when the guests came in, he was so much more at ease because he wasn't reading, oh, you went to the University of Oregon from 1991 to 1994, and here's a generic question that I wrote, you know? And meanwhile, the guy turns around and says something crazy, and you guys know when somebody says something crazy and nobody reacts, mm-hmm. that's the worst.
Yes.
You know, it's like, is anybody listening? Right. You know, so... There you go.
Yeah, it's like a dead fish on the lap. It's just
no
like,
question. No question. You know, which is why, again, I go back to you guys. You guys all listen to each other. You know,
well,
you
yeah, we do. You know, I remember we had Dan Patrick on the podcast, and I've told Stanzit this before Dan Patrick came on the podcast. When Dan and I started in radio, now I had done radio before Dan had it, and he had Dan Patrick on our show just to ask him advice as to how to do this. And Dan Patrick said, the most valuable advice I could give you, by far, and it's going to seem simple, but it's really important, is listen.
Yeah, listen, absolutely.
Listen to your guest, listen to your co-host, because it seems like a hard skill, and it is at times for me, but the worst thing you can have in TV is a guy not listening to the other guy, and he picks up at a place that is totally out of nowhere and has nothing to do what the other guy is saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But again, when you guys do it, you celebrate it because somebody comes around and says, Stu, do you realize that you asked the same question twice?
Of course.
Or, you know, whatever. And that's what makes the show fun and easy to listen to because, you know, it's like these guys are just a couple of jagoffs, you know, fooling around. So it's great.
And I've told Ernie this. I've said this countless times, Tim. I wonder if you agree with me. Because I do think sinking into your mistakes, not taking yourself very seriously, I think those things are very important in terms of having success in this industry and just to stand out a little bit, to be different, because everything's so cookie cutter and everything kind of feels the same. I told Ernie this, my favorite episode of the TNT pregame show or postgame show for that matter, because I believe this was a postgame show, is when Shaq turned around to go back to the big screen. He tripped over the plant.
Oh, my God.
You guys did not feel the need to get back to the NBA. And I believe this is during the playoffs, Dan.
Yeah.
Credit to you and the entire staff. You stayed in that moment with Shaq because you knew the audience wanted to stay there. You stayed in that moment with Shaq for, I believe, the remainder of the show. And it's the greatest episode I've ever seen of the greatest show I've ever seen. It was amazing.
Well, that was it. I mean, that was honest to God not set up. I mean, he just tripped. And, right. You know, he's just a human bowling ball. I mean, I'll give you a quick story is, you know, when he first came, we were already getting some nice plaudits and people were saying nice things about the show. And then immediately, as you guys know, when there's a change, we added Shaq. It was, he's going to ruin everything. Yep. And he mumbles, and he doesn't speak out, and he's not going to be able to, you know, be heard. Well, you know, you guys know this. Shaq did that. He mumbled on purpose because he didn't want to be a part of the media deal and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So I grabbed him after we first started to talk, and I said, Shaq, you got to almost sound like you're shouting to cut through Charles and to cut through the music and to cut through the natural sound or whatever. And, you know, you're going to have to work on this. And, of course, we struggled in the beginning, but – the first thing I did was we introduced them, sat them on the desk, and I told all four guys to start mumbling. You know, so they opened the show, and it was, you know, sounding like Shaq, like this. So then, but he does get better, and about a month goes by, and he mails it in on a halftime. He just mumbles his way through a halftime, just old habit. So I go downstairs and I'm MFing him because that's the way you got to talk to him. But the problem is, and the viewers at home can't see it, when you talk to Shaq, you talk him like this. You know, it's like you're pointing up to the Eiffel Tower.
Right.
So I'm screaming at him, you know, and which is what he understands. And I'm cursing and I'm saying, you can't do this. Are we good? Do you understand? Are we good? And he goes, yeah, we good. We good. I turn around. I'm not lying, Stu. He grabs me by the scruff of the neck and the pants and picks me up and holds me over his head. And I'm up in the air going, got it, Shaq. We're good. And it was like, Shaq was like, you can do what you can do, but I can do what I can do.
Tim, for the audience, if you don't mind, how tall are you and how much do you weigh?
That's the saddest part. I'm 5'11", 225 pounds. Holy shit. He just picked me up like I was and when he put me down like I was a baby, like,
boop. Tim Kiley, the executive vice president of sports now, just sports in general, okay, is with us here on Stupidity. So, Tim, I'm wondering, I'm certain you've been asked this, but I do wonder because I do, we love the show. It's impossible not to love the show. When did you know? It had to be pre-Shaq, obviously. I'm guessing it's right around when Charles got there. But when did you know you had this monster hit on your hands?
You know, what's funny, Stu, is I don't do social media. I'm not on anything. You know, the old gray beard here. But it was, because I would get a lot of grief. I was telling Stans before the show that, you know, like we would kill the movie that was, or Charles would kill the movie that was coming up on TNT. And TNT would get mad, and I'd get yelled at, and I just kept pushing them away. And then Twitter came. And Twitter, you know, everybody dove into it because it was the new thing, and you had to have a whole team of people doing Twitter. And I just said, if it's a good tweet, we'll put it up. And it was just people just, I love Shaq. Chuck's an idiot. You know, I mean, you guys know when they take a direct shot at one of our people in a fun way, that's better than anything. That's like they're in the room with you, talking to you, telling you what a moron you are, or vice versa. Because Shaq's turned everything into a your mama joke. You know, every time somebody tweets about his bad suit or whatever, it's a your mama joke. But the rise of Twitter, and then the first time we went with Charles, we went to the West Coast to do the Western Conference Finals. And I don't remember what year that would have been, but it must have been about 2001. Because, you know, on the East Coast, you guys know this from working late night sports shows. You don't know that anybody's watching, you know, because you're on a different time zone. And
sure,
most of the East Coast is in bed. We showed up at L.A., I guess it had to have been, because that was probably when Shaq was making his run with Kobe. And people just mobbed us, you know, like it was like a rock concert, you know, because the West Coast, as you said, when you were watching the Shaq bit, you know, you're half in a bag because you're a college guy. But, you know, for the West Coast folks, it was on at 11 o'clock and it got a lot more play out there. So it was crazy. I mean, people were just, you know, I got introduced to writers. You're the guy that does that stuff. Well, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. I just show up and, you know, set the bowling pins up and let them roll the ball down there and try to keep the cameras in the right place. So.
Tim, a simpler answer to when did you know could have been when I got all of these Emmys. I think I can see six of them behind you right now.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. No, it was very funny. The first one we ever got, we got taken off the air by a lightning bolt, and it was the playoffs. And I'm, you know, on the phone, and we're trying to get our signal back, and all this, and the phone rings, and it's a New York number. And I'm like, I got no time for this shit. I'm trying to get on the air. And it was my boss in New York saying, he's drunk because he just won. And he goes, you guys just won an Emmy Award. And I'm like, yeah, we're not on the air. So let me get back to you.
Stanzik and I love the producing. Stanzik's the producer, and I used to produce, right? So I've done everything. Yeah. In this industry. So we've been there, like not with the Emmys.
You're no recognition.
But no, we've been there. Like, hey, just want to get the fucking show on the air and want to get the cameras right. But Kylie, you're being very humble here because it has dawned on me very quickly here that you are the mastermind behind all of this. Seriously.
Well, I will admit to, you know, pushing the envelope, especially, you know, now in these days, one of my favorite segments, and a lot of people point to it as to sort of the essence of the show, is it became very obvious to me after the first or second year that the first 2 weeks of the season, Charles had no clue who was playing for who. And I'm not talking about the 12th guy on the bench. I'm talking about like Andre Drummond, you know, I mean, wait, he plays for Cleveland? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, and so I just,
love that though.
But if you guys look it up, we do it every year called Who He Played For. And it's a game show. And Chuck has to guess. And we pick, you know, five guys and we have uniforms spinning around and all this other stuff. And Kenny and Shaq just scream at Chuck because he's sitting there going, you know, they'll call up some dude, you know, Joe Blow that moved from Detroit to Denver, and the thing's spinning around, and they're yelling, Chuck, hurry up! Who he played for? Who he played for? Who he played for? And Chuck just goes, Knicks, you know, and then it's, you know, so he is the worst. He missed a question on Jeopardy that Martha Stewart got about Michael Jordan. That's how bad he is. It was like, what player has won six, you know, NBA or titles in basketball or something like that? And she goes, Michael Jordan. And he's sitting there frozen. Like, he, you know, he just had a moron, man. And so it's tremendous.
I mean, he lost one to him in
the final. No question. No question. I'm telling you, he is our Stu Gox. I'm telling you.
That's, I love it. And Charles and I love each other. But by the way, going back to your comment about when you hear something that we do, you're like, oh, why didn't I think about that? When I hear something that anyone does, and I say to myself, why didn't we do that? I just steal it, and I use it on our show. I mean,
yeah, Tim, we did the Who He Play For on this podcast. Yeah. I think we called it something different, but I remember
you're welcome to call it. It has no trademark. It is an open-ended thing. But I got asked by HBO, they did a special on Ernie, which was really beautifully done, but they asked me about, do you think you're pushing the envelope? And I'm saying, listen, it's the way that Shaq and Kenny would say it to Chuck. That's the way they talk to each other. Even though, you know, in this world that we live in, I'm sure I could get nailed to the cross. But thank God it's been going on for so long. People have kind of accepted it as, you know, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, he gets frustrated because he goes 0-for-5 every year. And when he gets one, it's like a party. You know, like Kenny jumps around and, you know, dances around. And it's an absolute guess. But, you know, as he goes to break, he's like, why you guys do me like this? I know who the stars be. Them bums, them you keep throwing up there. I don't know who those bums are, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's the greatest. I mean, it's just like you guys know whatever each of your weaknesses are. And his is he can't handle talking under pressure, literally.
Right.
Whatever your guys, you know, hole in your game is, you guys exploit it like we exploit it with those guys, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Whatever we can do to make them look like they're just idiotic human beings, because that's all we all are. So,
yeah, that's great producing. By the way, the spelling bee every year coincides somewhere around the NBA playoffs. We do a spelling bee, me versus Dan, where Dan gets like Steve Nash and I get like European players. Okay. And so feel free to steal that. Okay.
No,
don't give me any credit. And I think you guys should do it with Jack again.
No, the first thing we would do would be I always give credit because, as you said earlier, I agree with you. I lied a little bit. When I'm driving and I hear you guys do something, I absolutely steal it. But if it ever happens.
Mine is yours, sir, okay?
Yeah, no, if it ever happens like that, it would be in honor of our own pal, Stupendousty.
Tim Kiley, the executive vice president of the world, is with us here on Stupidity. So I've gotten to know Charles a bit, okay? And I think the one thing, Dan's obviously very good friends with him. The one thing that people, I don't think they realize about Charles is what a caring, genuine, giving, kind person that Barkley is. So I am stating that for the audience so they know. I think what the audience would want to know is what it's like on a daily basis to work with Charles Barkley. So if you can paint that picture for us, go ahead.
No problem. First of all, I just stole it. First of all, that's all he says. First of all, there's never a second of all. And before he gets to the set, we have a green room like you guys do, you know, where they watch the games or whatever. And Kenny and I smash fruit all over his desk, just bust grapes. He's an absolute, total, clean freak and germaphobe.
Oh.
You know, he was the oldest, and his mother cleaned houses, and so she told him it was his job, and he would get his ass whipped if the house wasn't clean. So he has, Stu, he walks around with Lysol and those wipes. This was before COVID-19. This is as long as I've known him.
Crazy.
And so we just figure out ways to torture him. And then at the same time, we're in a commercial break, right? This is Mr. Clean, Mr. Germs, whatever. We're in a commercial break, which, again, is something that I kind of started to see the value of accidentally. We keep rolling in commercials, you know, because something will happen. And, you know, Chuck will go to slap Kenny or whatever. Chuck, Mr. Clean, takes out a pen cap and starts digging in his ear to clean the wax out of his ear. And we're sitting there thinking, like, oh, should we use this? Yeah, come on a break with it. You know, and like, again, we were supposed to be talking about some big game with the Lakers, and the next thing you know, we're talking about Chuck's gross ear wax. But, you know, that's what he's like. At the same time, as you know, he donates and does things absolutely on the down low, doesn't tell anybody. For example, when the Warriors were in the Western Conference Finals, it was a big wildfire up there. And I didn't know about it. We were just humping it from day to day. It was 6 weeks of the playoffs. We were pretty tired. And one of the younger kids that ran Twitter came up to me and said, "Hey, I got this video. I didn't know about it." And it was a big, wide, long shot of Chuck and a bunch of firefighters right near. He had left his hotel, drove up, because it was not a short trip. You know, it was up in the countryside of above San Francisco or below. I can't remember. And he had a check and gave him a check. I mean, who does that? You know, I mean, especially, you know, he walks the city. He never has anybody with him. You know, like an entourage or whatever, or bodyguards, and except when he goes to the bar, he does then. But
seen him do it. I've seen him do it down here in Miami, and I will tell both of you guys, LeBron James, NBA Finals. You guys were down here all the time.
Uh-huh.
There were people lined up to just say hi to Charles Barkley, and Barkley would not leave that arena until he had said hello to everyone. Tim,
it's true, and. I think if he wasn't a basketball player, he would have been a born politician. You know, because he loves the glad hand and he loves to do all those things. Now, could he actually run something? You know, they always talk about him wanting to be governor of Alabama. Well, I already told him, I said, "Look, dude, if you run for our governor, you're going to win. And I'm going to be your second in command. And in 6 months, we're going to get thrown in jail for fraud and everything else." So I said, "Practice putting the coat over your head for the perp shot." But I want them to run for governor so I can, you know, steal everything they got, and it'll be good.
You and I are kindred spirits, Kylie. I'm telling you, man. I am telling you. Except for those Emmys.
You guys got Marconi's coming. Don't worry about it.
So commercial break content is something I'm interested in, because I am telling you, like, our show, the secret to our show, it all happens during the commercial breaks. Dan is this pillar of journalism. It's like Dad trying to get work done at home. And all the kids are trying to prevent Dad from getting his work done at home.
No question.
Because we're just talking nonsense. And Dan's listening, and he's scribbling, and he's writing things down. And then he'll usually carry it over into the next segment. So I find that fascinating, the commercial break content, because it's where you'll find the most honest conversations, the funniest conversations. How often do you guys carry content from the commercials over to the show?
Nightly. I mean, you know, I'm dying for that to happen. Like,
right.
You know, I don't know if Bernie used this expression when he said to you, you know, he's referred to as the greatest traffic cop in the world. And he goes, "That's an insult to traffic cops, because I want them to wreck into each other." Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's in commercial hits, and I'm sure Dan does the same thing. Head down, Stan just talking to him. "What are we doing here?" And you're over there blabbing about, you know, the shitty sandwich you had for lunch, or, you know, the fart that somebody just cut, or, you know, whatever went on. The best thing I can tell you is we were sitting there one night, and Chuck was in, you know, he's a binge everything. He binge eater, binge drinker, binge this, binge that. So he was on one of his binges where he was going to lose 300 pounds in 2 days, you know. So he was working out, doing all this crazy shit, and he's sitting in the chair, Stu, and goes like this. Oh, like he gets a cramp in his hamstring, right?
Right.
He gets up, jumps out of the chair. It's on the internet. You can just Google Chuck gets a cramp. And Kenny, who is the biggest, like, troublemaker, he's the dude from the neighborhood who was always sticking a needle in everybody, starts going, Chuck, grab your lip and squeeze it real hard. Grab your lip and squeeze it. It'll make it go away. And Chuck's going, what kind of hood rat shit is that? You know, and all this stuff. Yeah. And then he just launches the, yo, mother, think this is funny, blah, 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 blah. So we immediately turned it around. I don't know how we did it, but we were able to bleep everything and still get it in. But seriously, if you guys get a chance, watch Chuck Gets a Cramp. And best example of, you know, interplay that happens. But, you know, like him scribbling his – or doing his thing with his pen, cleaning his ear out with his pen, all that stuff was in commercial break, you know, and – you guys both know as producers, the thing you hate the most is commercials because it wrecks everything. You know, you're in a role and you got to get your breaks in. I understand. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. But the beautiful part was as soon as we hit commercial, I'm like, we still rolling because something's going to happen. Right. And, you know, when that happens, like you said, you guys mine it for everything it's worth. So do we, you know what I mean? Yeah. Those guys are such goofballs that it just, shit just happens to them. Like, shit just happens to Chuck, you know. And I mean, and it's a beautiful thing.
We had a segment today that happened. Me and Billy were just talking during the commercial break that we firmly believe that LeBron James is going through his roster and he's deciding who he wants, who he doesn't want. And he's telling Avery Bradley, hey, you'd be safer at home than you will be in this bubble because he wants to really play with J.R. Smith. And then that turned into a conversation where people are selling their services like Mario Chalmers outside the bubble in the event that someone tests positive for COVID. There's John Stockton and Karl Malone selling their services because they haven't won a title. They're outside the bubble. Hey, LeBron, if you need me, I'm here tonight. It's almost like basketball prostitutes.
No question. Absolutely no question.
Dan went to air with it. Dan took it right to air. He loved it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Chuck will be next in line since he doesn't have one either.
In fact, he came up during the conversation. That's very funny. Tim, do you have a top three moment? Like, if there was a medal stand for best moments on your show, do you have a top three for us?
Yeah, and I urge anybody who hears this to look them up. So we were going to Vegas, and remember when that was when he raced Pavetta,
right.
You know, and that was going to be a big deal. And the NBA, one of the NBA guys came to me and said, if this thing screws up, we're all going to lose our job, right? And I'm like, dude, have some confidence. It's Barkley. I mean, more people in the arena wanted to see that race than they wanted to see the All-Star game and all
absolutely
that stuff. But in that, you know, we were really building it up because we're going to Vegas, and every show we would have some kind of an element that said, hey, we're going to Vegas. It's going to be nuts. So we had sent a producer ahead to get some, you know, whatever, B-roll shots or something. And I said, can we get Wayne Newton? And some people made some phone calls. Wayne Newton loved it. So I said to the kid, look, what I want you to do is say, basically, Wayne Newton's a thug, and he's telling Chuck that if you come to this town, I'll kick your ass and all this other stuff, and I don't need your bullshit. And every time he said it, he curses. You look it up. It's funny as shit. Every time he curses, we put a beep that said Donka Shane on it, you know, that stupid song he's singing.
Yeah.
So Chuck came out of it. We started it by going, Chuck, you know, Ernie bled into it beautifully, going, you know, sometimes people, famous people, get across each other and you don't know why. And Chuck, what did you do to Wayne Newton? I don't know, Ernie. I like Wayne Newton. He's a nice guy. I've been to his house. And then we rolled this tape, and it's Wayne Newton screaming at Chuck, telling him he's going to beat his ass.
And he would, by the way.
No question. The other one was David Blaine. This was early. David Blaine, the magician, did a thing where he held his breath for like 9 minutes.
I remember this. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So I get a phone call, and Chuck doesn't call very often. When he does, it's good. So it's that afternoon. He goes, boy, I need a fish tank. And I'm like, what? He goes, get me a fish tank and a pair of goggles. I'm going to beat David Blaine's record, right? So it's Chuck holding his breath if you look it up. So, you know, we brought this tank out, and we put a camera inside the tank looking up through the water. And Chuck had a pair of stupid goggles on, and he puts his head in the tank, and Kenny starts telling jokes and jabbing him in the side, and Chuck made it 23 seconds. That was how long he held his breath. So he wouldn't last very long on Miami Beach at your place going in the water. So
no, he would not. He told us the other day he was terrified of swimming, actually. He
didn't No question. And then the last one, let's see. Oh, the last one was Kenny had a baby. He was out for like 6 weeks on what's it called? Paternity leave now,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
And every show, Stu, Chuck bitched. Where's Kenny at? It's bullshit. He has 6 weeks off. So Kenny comes back and he's just chirping about what a great dad he is. And I know because of Chuck's cleaning stuff, I know that, you know, he has a daughter grown now. But I know he never touched a diaper because he can't stand, you know, crushed fruit, much less, you know, a diaper, a dirty diaper. So I set up a diaper changing contest. And it's online. If you just see Charles Barkley diaper, and Ian Kenny both had a plastic baby with a diaper and powder and everything, and it was going to be so you could change the fastest. But what we didn't know was what Chuck didn't know was we had taken a baby Ruth and microwaved it and put it in his baby's diaper. So when he opens the diaper, you got to see it online. It looks like Mike Tyson hit him with a left hook. Stu, I drove home going, I just put shit on the air. Literally put shit on the air.
And it was golden shit. And it's the best moment in show history, according to the executive vice president.
Exactly. So there you go.
That is so great. By the way, Charles, and maybe you can tell him this, he did a really weird thing during an interview with us one time, where he felt like he had to spell out, I'm Jewish, okay?
Yeah.
He had to spell out the word Jew, because if you said the word Jew, it was offensive to Jews. So he kept saying, my J-E-W-I-S-H friends. And I stopped him. I said, Charles, you can say Jew, you can say Jewish, don't be offended. And he goes, that's not what my J-E-W friend said. And I said, stop spelling it, or I'm going to come there and fight you, Barkley.
Great, because here's a guy who's worried about being offensive that way.
Yes.
He, again, another time he calls me. Remember when the NBA they changed the basketball to, you know, it was like a politically correct move, and the basketball was like made out of some synthetic thing, mm-hmm. and it lasted about a month.
Yeah.
So he calls me. It's opening night, and, you know, the new basketball is one of the topics we were going to talk about. He goes, boy, give me a cheeseburger. And I'm like, what? Give me a cheeseburger. I need a cheeseburger. I don't care where it's from. Just give me a cheeseburger. So we come out and, again, talking about offensive, because everybody was up in arms about, you know, treating the cows right and all this other stuff. We open the thing, and he pulls out a cheeseburger, and Ernie goes, what are you doing? And he goes, Ernie, cows are for testing and for eating. And he starts eating a hamburger on there. But he's worried about offending you about saying Jewish. You know,
I told him it's okay. I told him to never do it again. It was a couple.
The other thing is he says playing basketball on a sprained ankle is worse than giving birth. And you can imagine how that went over with. But you know what? The tweets that would come in would be mostly women, and they were like loving it. You know, like torturing them. You know, so because you know how he does it. He somehow says something with a wink in his eye and gets away with it.
All right. Listen, you have been great. We're going to do this again. I can't wait. But we have a game we want to play with you. But before we get to it quickly here, do you have a worst show moment? Is it like something that stands out?
Oh, my God,
like,
yeah.
You probably have thousands of them, right?
Martin Luther King Day. There was a full slate of games. And I don't know if you guys seen this dude. He's probably been in Miami. But he's a speed painter. And, you know, and he, for halftime, you know, they bring him out and he quickly paints a portrait. So it's Martin Luther King Day. It's a little bit more of a serious show. I mean, we're not goofing too much. So we were opening each highlight with something that was happening in that city. You know, look at Memphis did this and honor Dr. King and all that. And it, wherever this guy was, he was speed painting. Chuck goes, Ernie, who that? That looked like, that looked like Oliver Miller, right? And it was Martin Luther King. The guy finishes it was Martin Luther King. So I'm sitting there and I'm going, oh my God. He just said, you know, Oliver Miller? I mean, give me a break, right? We go to commercial. My paint box guy puts up a split screen of Oliver Miller and Martin Luther King. And they look alike.
That's great. Right?
So oh, I'm sitting God. There in the break and I'm going,
oh no.
Should I? And I went and I said, Ernie, just look up, be prepared. And up it came, and they were dying laughing. But I drove home, and I go, let's see. The greatest human being that ever walked the face of the earth, and I put him next to Oliver Miller, I might not be working tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
I don't know whether I got away with it because it was 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, man. But
you got, and maybe because of the success and all those Emmys behind you of the show. But, but Kyle, you've got some stones, man. And I'm proud of you for having them.
I take that as a huge compliment from Stupendous Steve.
Oh,
so before we get to this game, a couple of things. Did Shaq indeed offer $1 million to slap Levitard? Because I could make that happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
good. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Dan shouldn't count himself in any exclusive company because Shaq's threatened to slap everybody, and you know, including me, picking me up and throwing me around like a rag doll. But yeah, if you want to make it happen, it's no problem. Come on down anytime.
You guys
got to come up.
Yeah, we'll come up. I'm just confirming because Dan wants to fight Dana White. There's $250,000. Then we heard Shaq got involved and said, "Forget 250. I'll give $1 million just to slap Levitard."
And so there's no question he would do it, and it wouldn't be for $1 million. It'd be for stacks. I only give out stacks.
And then I need you to do this for me, okay?
Yes.
I don't want to have beef with Shaq, okay? I go about my life trying to have no confrontation in my life. I don't want beef with anyone. I'm happy-go-lucky. I pinch myself every day because we get to do this. All I said one day on the air was that Tim Duncan was better than Shaq. And he starts DMing me that he's going to come down there and beat the living shit out of me. And so I need you. I'm not even joking. He has my phone. I have the whole DM conversation right here. I need you to patch up this relationship with Shaquille O'Neal for me.
Done. No problem.
Good. All right. Here's the deal. I'll make a deal. Next time you come on, because I want to talk more about sports centers. We invite Shaq into the Zoom chat, and you just get us on good grounds, okay? Is that fair?
No question. Absolutely done.
Okay. And I'll arrange this in exchange for that. He can slap Levitard all he wants for free.
Oh, well. Listen, I felt the vice grip of those hands, and, yeah. And each of his hands alone weighs about 27 pounds. So right. It would be like getting hit with a sledgehammer. So, you know, I mean – tell Dan to run. I know he's a tough guy, but tell him to run.
The first time he runs will be the first time he runs. So, and listen, Shaq was very funny. He was actually fair during the DM. He was saying Duncan was a 4, I was a 5.
And I'm like, no question. We always give top 10 centers, and we put Shaq at 11, and he's actually pissed off. You know,
I love it. All right, we got a game for you. Tim Kiley, Executive Vice President of the World, is with us here on Stupidity. EJ, Kenny, Shaq, or Charles? Just a series of quick questions, and you give us the answer, okay?
Yes, sir.
Most likely to be late to the show, EJ, Kenny, Shaq, or Charles?
Chuck.
That was quick. Stanzik, that surprised you at all?
My money was on Kenny, actually, for that one.
Really? Who's the earliest? EJ?
Oh, Ernie by far. I mean, it's not even a quote. He's there the day before, so I think he sleeps in his office doing notes. Which he never gets to use, by the way, because, you know, Chuck talks over him. So.
Right, and you taught him a long time ago, notes are bad. Thank God for you. EJ, Kenny, Shaq, or Charles, who was on their phone the most?
Shaq, by a mile.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't even want to venture to know who he's talking to, what deals he's doing, little general, God knows what's going on.
Little general, right, he's become very corporate.
Every time he sends me a video or something, I'm like, do I really want to open this?
Shaq's going to show up on set, you should do this, because I have, and again, something you could steal from me. Rather than pitching all these products verbally, just have them dressed up like a NASCAR, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's it.
All right, let's continue. EJ, Kenny, Shaq, or Charles, worst singer, best singer? Worst singer first.
Kenny's the worst and thinks he's the best.
Right.
And Shaq is obviously a platinum rapper, so I can't. Ernie can actually sing. But Shaq, you know, it depends on if you're going to call it rapping or straight singing. But Ernie is, you know, like he's like a show tunes guy, which is hilarious because it's you know, it's like he'll walk into the set singing in the rain or something like that, you know. But Shaq is obviously Mr. Platinum, and he'll probably come slap me if I don't give him credit for his music.
All right, biggest prankster. I have a feeling I know the answer here. But biggest
Kenny
prankster.
Smith.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Upset.
Without a doubt. I mean, pulls more bullshit. He is the kid who forgets his homework and lies like hell about it. I will tell you, he was late for a show one time. And I love it when he talks about, because, you know, he's the two-time champion. And that pisses Charles off. And then the even worse is he beat Shaq one year, right?
Right. Yeah.
So they both hate his guts. And he does all these big, serious speeches about doing the little things right, you know, championship teams. And then he's late for every show we do. So it's like, you know, where's that coming from? But I am not lying to you. He was late, missed the pregame, made it for halftime. And he lives, you know, those guys, they stay at a hotel like literally two blocks away. You can walk it in 5 minutes. Kenny was late, missed the pregame. And claimed it was because a zebra got loose on the Atlanta highway. And it's a zebra did get loose. It got away from the zoo and there was a big traffic jam, but it was on the other side of town. It wasn't even anywhere close to where we are. You know,
the story was true, but it had no effect on Kenny arriving.
No, yeah, the story might have, I mean, it might as well have been in Chicago, you know, for all we care. It was just ridiculous. So, you know, yeah, it's not even close. He's the biggest jag off in the world when it comes to it.
I love it. Most gullible.
Chuck, 100. Biggest tuna fish in the world. I mean, you know, again, you can hook them with anything. And especially when you put him under pressure and get, you know, if you just put a time clock on him and ask him to answer stuff, he loses it.
I love this. Tim Kiley, executive vice producer. We don't know what it is. He doesn't know what it is.
I don't know either.
Of the greatest pregame show in the history of pregame shows. Best bromance, you and Ernie, Kenny and Charles and Shaq.
Charles and Shaq.
Wow.
They want to kill each other. But you know, very seriously, you know, Shaq's mom's still alive, but Chuck's mother and grandmother, who basically raised them, are both passed on, and they were best of friends. So it's funny because they knew each other and knew of each other long before they both became big stars. And, you know, they're always fighting. I mean, I'm going to beat your ass. They're always threatening to kill each other. But then Shaq's mom will call and say, that's enough. I've seen enough. And they literally, little kids, they just stop.
I love this. Most likely they answer a phone call from you at 2:30 in the morning. I'm taking Ernie out of the equation because I know he's the most likely. So let's just narrow it down to Shaq, Kenny, or Chuck.
Shaq.
Because he's always on his phone.
Yeah, because he's always on his phone. And he actually cares, like, he gives a shit about what I think. Like, did I do a good job there? Right.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he's still in that stage where Chuck, Kenny, and Ernie could give two shits what I say.
It's Shaq,
like, we're going to do what we're going to do. You just tell us when to go to break.
Right. Shaq will get there, though, Tim. You know that, right?
No, it was only a matter of time, you know. So, yeah, absolutely. I've given up on that a long time ago. So.
Oh, that is so great. Who would you most want to be stranded with on a deserted island? Would it be Shaq, Kenny, Chuck, or EJ?
Shaq. Because really? He'd get Why? Me off the island. He'd get me off the island.
He'd make a call?
Yeah, no, he'd make a phone call or, you know, here's my thing. Like, when he first started, you know, we were still in the middle of all the problems. Well, we're always in the middle of problems in the Middle East and Iraq and all that. And when he walked into the studio and I met him the first time, and, you know, I shook his hand and it was like shaking a 27-pound slab of beef. I said, all we need to do is give him a Viking helmet and a big axe, like those dudes in Game of Thrones, and just drop him off in the Persian Gulf and say, let him go. And everybody would just go, we surrender. It's over. So if he's on a desert island with me, all I got to do is climb on his shoulders and he'll just walk me to the next island. So it'd be all right.
All right, last two for you, Tim. Most likely to run for office, EJ, Kenny, Shaq, Charles. I think it's Charles, right?
Yeah, Chuck. Until he finds out that he has to actually work. So, you know, for a guy who works one day a week and has been threatening to quit for 20 years, I mean, he wants to run for office, so it sounds good, but he doesn't want to do the work.
Exactly. Well, you'll do it for him.
Absolutely. And I'll, like I said, I'll have my trench coat over my head when the FBI drags me out. So.
All right, final one. Most likely to write a book about inside the NBA. I should include you in this because you should be writing the book. EJ, Shaq, Kenny, Chuck.
Kenny, and it'll be all about him. There's no question. Kenny's right. The greatest of all time. Just ask him.
It's like my dad tells me, you're a legend in your own mind.
Tim, you are a legend, though, man. I mean,
Tim, come on.
Keep going.
Stanzik. Between the editing he's got to do and then all the suck up I'm doing, it's killing him.
Let's cut it off right there. It's a perfect ending. That answer was the perfect ending. Tim Kiley, Executive Vice President of All Things That Are Sports and my new best friend. We thank you for your time, and there will be a second date, okay? Because I got plenty more questions for you. Thank you, sir.
No problem. My pleasure. And Stans, you can ride with me any day, brother.
I mean, after what you just did to him, you should be driving him for the rest of his life.
There's no question.
You know what that means, Tim.
Yeah, exactly. As Chuck would say, fly me to the game in a spaceship, boy.
Oh my God.
All right, so Tim Kiley, Ernie Johnson was right. He told us to go get Kiley. Stanzik did not waste any time. He got Kiley, and Kiley delivered. Now, we delivered it in 3 hours instead of 1 hour. We'll get to that in a second. But Stanzik, he was fantastic. He delivered.
I mean, three peas in a pod, the three of us. We could talk to that guy all day. We are kindred spirits.
I know.
He does not like the serious nature of sports. He does not like the rigors of television. He likes free open spaces. Do whatever you want. Don't look at the cameras. He was awesome.
He was great. And we will speak to him again. I would have spoken to him for the entire day, but we were having some technical difficulties. You want to have Kiley on again. There's more there. We didn't get
to. Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying that. 50 some odd minutes, and I didn't feel like I got to nearly enough.
I know.
Perhaps this is why. Stanzik's head explodes. Listen to it as it happens.
Tim, we lost you there.
You got me?
Yeah, I hear you still. We don't hear Tim. He said he has some internet issues before we got connected. I just emailed him and said we lost you.
Did we lose him?
Shit.
Damn.
He said there's a storm down there.
All right. You're going to have an edit.
Yeah, we lost you again, huh? Yeah. That's all right. It's okay.
Oh, we lost it. He's going to get so mad, Kiley. Stanzik is so mad. Can we lose him? Oh, Stanzik. Stanzik. We lost you. We lost you. We lost you. We lost you. Oh. All right, Stanzik, I would say just let him. We could end it like clean right there. Stanzik, why did you put your hands up?
We played high school, and I showed up, and I came from a different grade.
That's why.
That's why I'm shaking my head.
Don't get mad at me, man. Don't get mad at me.
No, I am. You could have just said clean, quick out and gotten out and then asked about the Merino hat.
All right, sorry. You made his life a living hell.
For two reasons. One, I gave him a prep sheet on you. Like, the fourth item was played high school football with Dan Marino. Just to mention it to the three-hour mark when we're on the ninth version of this.
Have you listened to any
of... And I texted him, Tim, I texted him, I said, clean and quick out. He goes, why are you shaking your head? The thing froze. I go, that's why I'm f***ing shaking my head right there.
Wait.
That's my boy.
Oh, my God.
Kylie, he has listened to none of this. He hasn't listened to the conversation because if I just come out, of course I saw the Marino nugget. But if I say, hey, Dan Marino, you grew up with him, it sounds like I prepared. If I said Marino hat, what's going on there? That's the way Kylie would want it.
Yeah, but you could have done it 50 minutes ago.
Well, I did it. I did it now. All right.
And not after I said clean and quick out.
Here's my clean and quick out.
Yep.
Let's cut it off right there. It's a perfect ending. That answer was the perfect ending. Tim Kylie, Executive Vice President of all things that are sports and my new best friend. We thank you for your time, and there will be a second date, okay? Because I got plenty more questions for you. Thank you, sir.
No problem. My pleasure. And Stans, you can ride with me any day, brother.
I mean, you get mad at me, but I got you in with Kylie. I didn't do anything. My connection was just fine. You were lashing out at me. Really, most of that was Kylie's fault, except for the clean head. And that's the eternal frustration that many people and everyone who works with me has, is it must have infuriated you even more that Kylie agreed with me. Yeah, you're angry, and Kylie's like, that's my boy.
No, he was relishing in me being angry, because he was like, I love when... He's been me before.
But I was given the explanation of why I did the Marino thing the way I did it, because it's casual, Marino hat, blah, blah, blah. You wanted it at the beginning, and Kylie's like, that's my boy.
See, you totally misheard that. My boy? He was saying that's my boy for me.
I don't know.
For getting at you. You totally misheard that.
I think you misheard it because that's what normal people would say. But then you work with me, and strange things happen. As Levitard, where you think he's talking to you, but he's really talking to me. Play it again. You'll hear it. You've made his life a living hell.
For two reasons. One, I gave him a prep sheet on you. Like, the fourth item was played high school football with Dan Marino. Just to mention it to the three-hour mark when we're on the ninth version of this.
Have you listened to any of
this? And I texted him. Tim, I texted him. I said, clean and quick out. He goes, why are you shaking your head? The thing froze. I go, that's why I'm f***ing shaking my head right there.
Wait.
That's my boy.
You hear that?
What?
That's my boy was for me.
Oh, I don't know. It's debatable. Listen, tomato, tomato. You hear it your way and I hear it mine. And what I heard was Stan's excited complaining. Stan, that's my boy. We enjoyed it a lot. This is why I'm telling you. Little squabbles and fights like this over who Kylie was talking to is what has made us bigger than missing in Alaska. Stupidity!